All right, welcome. We are live April 16, 2022. Not August at all, dude. What are you talking about, August? April 16, 2022. Now I'm trying to wrap my head around a lot of what's going on. As the audience, we have like new audience and, you know, that's good. Sometimes people ask or they wonder, number one, my personality or like my attitude, my manner of speech is totally not at all connected or reflective of my professional experience and educational background. This is just like my normal, like, dude who you might know. It's not an act. This is just me. But I think a lot of people are institutionalized for a long time, and a lot of their conversations happen within hierarchical, you know, structures, and they want to establish, you know, maybe even subconsciously, they want to establish some authority on a subject. And the problem is that there's an organization called Media Matters that Soros finances. And even though Telegram censorship works in different ways, okay, it does exist. I mean, there's pressure. And you just have to kind of use search engines with my name to get a background on why I might know things that I know. Telegraph this stuff, the more that I, you know, it's just not at all in anyone's list of best practices. But I have sufficient background in areas of insurgency, counterinsurgency, color revolutions, geopolitics in particular. But, you know, that's, you know, specialization on the information war within the rubric of fourth generation warfare, so-called, you know, slash quote unquote hybrid war. But I'm not a big fan of the term. Net-centric warfare is a term that gets used a lot. I'm constantly under investigation. You can see myself in relation to the Russia collusion stuff and the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. I get referenced, focused in some sections on some of these reports, and then the U.S. Treasury. My last lovely encounter with them was on March 8th or 9th, in fact. So, yeah. I'm an innocent man. I've never been charged, let alone convicted of anything, but we live in a post-justice system. As the public sphere has gotten smaller, in thanks in part to a perversion of conservative politics, deregulate everything or everything should be privatized. Well, guess what happens when free speech is privatized, or what happens when money is privatized? Like, this is the digital sphere. Now, in actual reality, still, you could mail me a check or, you know, buy me a cup of coffee. You could hand me a couple bucks. If I had like a guitar case out and I was like on Venice Beach, throw a couple bucks. Might make a couple $100 a day from tips, right? But with the enclosure of the digital space into increasingly private corporate hands in a monopolistic way, we should also include, we're not free to just say things or do things. So I really have a lot of respect for you guys for maintaining a certain decorum in our chats, because, you know, you may feel safe, and, you know, in many ways, somewhat, you are safer with your little, you know, anonymous handles and stuff. But me, the real existing person, like me, the actual human being with his name on the channel and, you know, I actually ultimately, yes, am held responsible for this concept that I don't agree with, but these are the conditions that we operate in under. It's called the community that I foster. The level of discourse or the temperature of the whatever, you know, basically, like, they want to get into, like, you know, do we meaning what am I responsible for? If it's homophobic or xenophobic, or promotes hate speech or anti-Semitism, you're going to go, you know, piddly fuck off in your merry way after whatever, you come drop your shitlings off in the chat and then go, whatever, you're going to go do masturbate. But I'm going to actually be the one who has to pay for your, you know, expressing your opinions effectively. And that's just the way it is. So, I hope that explains just a little bit about who I am and why we run this channel this way. Some of your opinions, you know, are ones that in other times and places you would either be allowed to say or you'd be shot for saying, you know. So, maybe this is just how it works nowadays, but I have to, my primary aim is to protect the viability of this community on the whole. And that means that certain individual expressions, restrictions on those are the cost of that. Does that make sense? So, and there have been people that have been with me for a number of years. Some of you are just curious. Now, given my very intimate experience and in-depth knowledge about a lot of things going on in the U.S., how intelligence operations work, especially in the media intelligence sphere, you may be wondering why I'm not, you know, why I don't appear more often. And, you know, I've actually been long ago banned from social media. My down throttling from social media began, you know, like with the algorithmic games and stuff, like in 2015. And I was being censored since like 2014, 2015. And also, I just have to be myself, and I try to separate, you know, what things are within my competence and whether educational or work experience to speak about, but those aren't the only subjects of interest to me in the world, and I like to talk about other things, and I try to say, look, this is beyond my, you know, my capacity, you know, like Dr. Artis, who's just a chiropractor, likes to talk about, you know, virology and epidemiology, right? So, like, you know, you would think that he says to people out there, hey, I'm just a chiropractor, and some people don't even think we should be called doctors at all, but I'm going to weigh in my opinion about virology. You see what I'm saying? He has a right to as a human being, but I always try to say, what are the things that are kind of in my area to have a clue about, and what are the things that I'm just, you know, because I'm a human being, and like yourself, I have interests that are beyond the things that I, you know, get paid or went to school about. Does that make sense? We could limit these broadcasts to just the subjects of my objective competencies, but I would get bored doing it. And I think it would be, I think there's so much terrain to cover, but it would be for someone who just had a particular fascination with my subject. And at that point, you know, I would just say, these are the books to read, you know, go to work in this field if this is that fascinating to you. It is like a lot of my work. And, you know, men like to talk about their work and shit like that to a certain extent. But I'd also like to just also talk about things that aren't my work, because then it feels like a lot less like work, right? Like a lot less like I'm working all the time, which I kind of am. And that's okay. I have a family to support, and I'm happy about that. It's a blessing. But it can't, you know, can't just always be that. And it's important that I also, for transparency and things like that, like disclose when something is like actually like what, you know, I might share an opinion about, oh gosh, like, what do I think about mudslides or Tartaria? And that's just like, I'm just like you, like, you know, reading books and listening to different experts that have been exiled or banned, and kind of trying to make heads and tails out of what's going on. But understanding propaganda and social control, social theories of social control, mass psychology, you actually can see how a lot of things that how deep it goes. So, you know, that is within my competency to talk about how deep things go. I mean, when you see it, when you work in this field and you see how far down the rabbit hole the things that get said really depart from probable reality, you can see that, hey, this is probably there's probably a pattern here that goes back. It's not limited. Like, fake news is not limited to today's events. Fake news has become a matter of the historical record going back hundreds, if not thousands of years. So, yeah, just, you know, I want to thank you again for, we have a couple moderators who work hard at keeping this comment section from being a shit show, and remove those bots that, hey, make $5,000 a day from home and things like that. And sometimes people might share a channel if the subject of their post, they might be a real person, not a bot, but if like the subject of that post is like so far removed from the OP, like, you might get caught in crossfire, dude. Like, you might get offed. So, you know, you take risks. You take risks when you share links to other channels, unfortunately. And that's just how it goes. You know, there's only so much time and effort that a person can put into it. If you write, hey guys, check out this channel, that looks just a lot like a spam bot, and you'll probably be treated that way. So that's just a fair warning, just putting it out there. You know, I love you all, but just saying, you know. Don't take it personally if you acted recklessly or in ways that might be normal in other shit show channels, but just there's costs that come with keeping things extra sanitary and orderly. And that's one of them, right? Now let's take a look. I asked you guys, you know, what are the subjects that of particular focus? And some of them are just real fast questions. So I'll just treat some of these as questions. And then I'll just separate them by turning the page. And I think these are pertinent to what's going on right now. So you have the effects of the supply strikes on Ukraine, and we've talked about this. They can't lap back and forth. They can't really, they have 92-octane gasoline is like hard to get in Ukraine right now. And then you have, you know, shortages of diesel. And now these things, these, you know, gas rationing and stuff like that, you have seen, you know, actually in other parts, in some European countries. So it's strange. But what's happening in Ukraine is actual strikes on some fuel facilities, lubrication and refineries and things like that. And they're not going to report on, obviously, it's a military security, national security issue in Ukraine to report openly on, you know, how those shortages are affecting them, you know, these on supplies, we're talking about oil. But you can see if what they're doing in the public, you know, with the consumer markets is addressing things this way, that's a sign that they're in trouble. Also, I think that the doubling back and forth thing, Kiev and then back in through Belarus and over, like moving the army on the Russian side, like, you know, past near Belgorod and then back over into the Donbass. Russia has this tremendous advantage of unlimited fuel. It's unlimited fuel. I mean, they have enough fuel for the present amount of needs to continue at least for the next 400 to 800 years. You see? And Ukraine is dependent on Russia for fuel. And they might purchase, you know, there are other sources of fuel in Europe. And of course, they are having to purchase that, at, you know, but they, when they have a refinery or a depot storage facility or something like this, or other petroleum or gas products like lubricants and stuff that are like for the, you know, oil, like 5W30 or whatever. That's what they mean by lubricants when you read it, like motor oil, as opposed to oil, that combustible oil like gasoline, right? So they're in trouble because all of this, look, so many things could be psychological operation. There could be the units that withdrew. See, so many people get confused, and then it confuses the popular discourse. Now, the satellite images don't lie, and, you know, maybe they've done some camouflaging, but you have people whose job it is to account for this are staring at these Maxar, you know, satellite images in real time all day long, and they look for every little speck moving on the screen. And most of these things that were brought in around Kiev were never used, and then they were withdrawn to just the Belarus side of the border, which is real super close to Kiev if you just look at a map, real super close. So now they could pop back in. The problem now is that so much of understanding the strategy of a war is about narratives, and there's a difference between how we understand things and how the top brass, let's say, on the American-Ukrainian side understand things. There's a big difference, okay? The problem is this, and this actually happens in all information wars so you can understand things, okay? Okay. All organizations have all these different levels of hierarchies, okay? And privy information is pretty much sequestered or quarantined on a need-to-know basis to people at the very top, okay? But those people have to give orders, and your basic fucking job is to follow those orders, not think that you are on the need-to-know level of why those orders are being delivered. Does that make sense? So if you have... if you have an organization and you know, there are, let me just put it this way, just to like be concrete and not abstract, okay? There are very high-ranking people in the Ukrainian military that their sense of what's going on and their understanding of the what are the factors in play are generated entirely by fake news and social media. So maybe some of that's real news and stuff like that, but fake news and social media. Now, if they just followed their orders, then maybe it would be fine. But it's still not, it's still a problem that, you know, because there's so many layers here, but I'm trying to, you know, break down something that's would require kind of like a drawing, you know, to kind of explain. Like imagine me like in a chalkboard, like, you know, maniacally with a million characters on the board, I'm drawing circles and all these lines and stuff. Okay. That's me right now. I'm trying to break down for you how this actually works. Okay. Because the Ukrainian lower level, okay, command field commanders and stuff, they have a general sense of what's going on, but their reality is augmented by narratives and presumptions and understandings of what's going on and what people think is what's going on in the field. Then you have morale. Like we can't, you know, we're going to be decimating our, we're going to have to like execute on for, you know, dereliction of duty or for, you know, what going AWOL or insubordination, one out of every 10 guys as an example, or we're going to have, you know, catchers with machine guns shoot guys who are trying to run away from the front. So there's all this pushback, and that happens in organizations too. You could be like ExxonMobil, and you have, let's say you know you're the head of ExxonMobil and you know that peak oil is a lie, but a lot of people in the organization whose job it is just to do their job, they think that peak oil is real. So then when like ExxonMobil announces some big project and you're like, oh man, this is never going to work, blah, blah, blah. And then they do like a, some kind of anonymous interview with like Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal. And they're not on a need to know basis on the very top level stuff. And they're going to end up giving a very unfavorable interview about some new project proposal that people who do know what the fuck is going on at ExxonMobil have decided to do. So information war and consciousness and perceptions work in all these multiple interrelated, multiply connected ways. You see? And so you have guys in the field who are like absolutely certain that the brass is out of their fucking mind. And you have this prejudice anyway, because in people who have practical experience in reality know that organizations are flawed. Decisions get made bureaucratically. There's a disconnect between what's going on in the field and what's going on, you know, at central command. And yet it's the guys at central command that actually have the full scope of a certain type of knowledge, but it's the guy, but guys in the field, the field commanders have a different scope that is more accurate about other types of knowledge. And they may try to push back or execute certain orders more cautiously than they should, or with less vigor than they should, or move certain units with respect to time frames a little bit more lax or a little bit cautiously, because they're not convinced that the guys they're taking orders from who are not in the field actually know what they're saying. But those guys not in the field, like Central Command, they actually have information, despite that they're also probably wrong. Okay, don't get me wrong. They're probably wrong about certain things that only field commanders would know, but they happen to know certain things like the Russians actually didn't leave that far from Kiev. 50% of those 50,000 are still right there at the on the Belarus border. They're just withdrawn farther back, and the units are scattered about. And, you know, we have it from Maxar satellite that they're all right there. So the Russians have mobility, and they're using tactic of maneuver. And the Ukrainians do not have mobility. They can become entrenched and pick a strategic location and kind of go turtle mode and build in their defenses. But then when things happen in other parts of the country, they're not going to be able to move to respond. It's almost just better that there they are. It's almost just better in many ways, maybe, that they get finished last, not first. So now Russian information war is focusing all this attention on Kharkov, and there might be the next big moves. Not that things aren't happening in Kharkov, but the next big push might not happen there. I mean, I'm just saying hypothetically, maybe, you know, in all probability it will, but don't be surprised if another front or another area that is technically a front already suddenly gets a lot more attention, or different types of attacks come in a different way, maybe with less regard for critical infrastructure. And we've seen those. We've seen, and what I'm saying is not a, you know, PFA statement. It's not a pulled from ass statement. We've seen direct things coming from the Russians about what they may escalate, and exactly that they would be hitting critical infrastructure, not like people's plumbing and stuff, but critical infrastructure to central government. So that is the way to think about these dilemmas on information. It isn't like the field commanders have a total view of things. They just might have a better understanding of things that one, you know, empirical information that one would have, right? But people's sense of what's real and their sense of the reality is obviously not purely empirically driven. I mean, they combine, people are constantly fusing their past experiences, which are how they've metabolized, how they've understood their own experience, which is not the same thing as what really happened to them, by the way. There's a lot of psychological factors going on, you know. But they have that, and then they have what they're seeing in front of them through their own lens of perception, and which, again, is not the same thing as reality. Like, your perceptions are not the same thing as reality, but they are empirical observations. There's always issues with cognitive processing of that information. Well, you could have nerve damage on your hands, or you could be, you know, seeing things. You might see, you know, for example, I'll just give an abstract example. When Native Americans first saw, or first were looking out on sea, and these big, you know, English or Spanish galleons were like on the horizon on the shores, they didn't really see them. They didn't really see them in the way that you would recognize it and see it. They may not have even at a certain distance been able to see them at all until they were obviously, I mean, they weren't blind to things that were right in front of them. They couldn't, they obviously could see them when they were right up front, but in the same way that you might identify a ship on, you know, in the distance, they didn't see them. So that's just, it's, even though we have empirical sense organs, empirical perception based on empirical observation based on sense organs, doesn't mean that we still have to have a context and a working frame of reference to interpret all that data. Information war works completely with all of this stuff in mind all the time. Okay, there's real maniacal levels of genius involved in information war. It's a war on consciousness. It's a war on perception, okay? And it's not, you know, people say, well, it doesn't, why is information war so important, since this is a battle in the field and the outcome will be the outcome? Why does it really matter what people who are observers think? Because there's no, if you understand, first of all, communication lines in fourth generation warfare, okay, you have soldiers have, you know, communication. It's not just like it was in the old paradigm where they would get like the GI version of a newspaper, like the New York Times delivered to Hanoi. That's the fucking Vietnam edition that, oh, we're winning, you know, like, it's not, you see how that works. So don't think in terms of old information. You can't think in terms of old information. You have to think in terms of even the commanders in the field are influenced by fake news and things. And even if they're aware of it, imagine if a conspiracy theory or some fake news about a mounting army on the horizon that is being through these telegram things that guys in the field are used. It's not supposed to, but people are using VPNs, and there's a lot of guys have their phones in the field. That's a known thing. And I mean, just look at all these loot packet, like when the guys get killed and then you like empty their bags and you see like these cell phone charger cords and cell phones and stuff, and you pull the pic, they pull the pictures out of them and identify them. Okay. So, you know, this is what's happening, right? So, I mean, we all get that, right? So that's how information actually war actually works. It's actually like confusion and dissent between the ranks and commanders, because you can have guys in the rank and file who are just convinced that the Russian army is just over that hill, mounting a giant force of, 10,000 guys or something, based upon Ukrainian propaganda, which is trying to maybe even hyperventilate the spectacle that there's going to be some assault on some town, because they're trying to, because that information war vector may be trying to promote that there's going to be some slaughter or some war crimes happening. So they're going to start saying that this, Russian unit, very big number of Russian units are right here on the other side of this hill. And the Ukrainian guys in the field are actually going to believe that. They're going to be victims of their own propaganda, or then they might try to check, well, what are the Russians saying? And the Russians might be saying the same thing. In fact, Ukrainians might have picked it up from the Russians. This is how it works, okay? There's all this cross-dissemination and stuff like that. All this pollution of what people think is happening, what people think is possible. Guys in the field are telling their field commanders, you're crazy, it's a suicide mission, when it's not. You have field commanders telling the central command that these orders are crazy and make no sense. Give me just a minute. I'll be right back. And we're back. So now maybe with this, you have a better appreciation of how powerful and critical information war is. Now let me look at what else I might be inspired by from your comments. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that also speaks to Russia's latest strategy. What people do is, look, here's the thing. People have shows and they need to produce content, and they play upon people's tribalism, and they don't really want to challenge or confront their audience with the reality that in information war, both the sides are full of shit. They don't want to. And that's not a black pill thing, okay? That's a red pill thing, okay? There is a very beautiful silver lining on that cloud, okay? if you stick around and think these things through, you'll understand. It's just, there's Europeans tend to understand, appreciate these things on average a little bit better, but there's certainly been an Americanization of European attitudes, which tends towards pragmatism, which tends to be more like, I have a right to be correct. I have a right to be right. And yet, the truth for me to be right, the truth has to be fairly simple, because I'm not an expert in this field. And yet, as an American, I'm told that I'm supposed to have an opinion about every fucking subject. If you look at like interviews from like, you know, like those street interviews where a person goes around and asks people on the street what they think about things. Like when you look at people like in Japan or China, and when they're asked these things, people will just say like, oh, this is not a subject that I have a lot of information on, but I'm curious to learn more. Oh, okay, thank you. You know, arigato. Okay, ciao. You know, that's it. But in the United States, there's this cultural thing that you ask someone a question on the street and they feel like they're supposed to have an opinion. And then they end up saying, you know, whatever they're going to say, it ends up, you know, remember Jay Leno used to do like the what Americans think or whatever. If you just would say like, hey, you know, this is not a subject I'm strong in, and you wouldn't be the punchline of any joke. But yeah, there's this a tradition of anti-intellectualism based in the tradition of pragmatism, which actually thinks that complex things can't possibly be true. It's like the opposite of how reality works. Like, oh, that's too complicated. That can't be it. It's like, okay. People want to think that reality operates on as simple a foundation as they understand it. And, you know, it's a bit narcissistic, or it's a little bit, you know, ego driven, because it reconciles two problems. On the one hand, you want to think that you know things, and, you know, that feeling of thinking that maybe you know things should probably come from a very serious examination of those things. On the other hand, you're unable to understand those things because it's not your field of expertise, or you don't have the patience to listen to experts. So you just want to have these knee-jerk quasi-opinions and then opine on those. So that's the thing. And that's why governments need to propagandize their citizens. You can't just ignore them. Other governments will propagandize them. If they have the internet, I mean, other governments are going to propagandize them. It's just that corruption and disconnection between the elites and regular people is at an all-time high in the U.S., and so is wealth inequality. The destruction of the middle class is at an all-time high. So on this channel, we use the word propaganda in the correct sense. It's in the neutral sense. All information, irrespective of its truth content, which has a generally quantifiable outcome in terms of its impact on attitudes of the public, which in turn have an impact on their decisions or sense of obligations, is by definition propaganda. Propaganda does not mean that it's false information, but all information is potentially misleading, because information about phenomenon is not the phenomenon itself. In other words, the map is not the terrain. So information is necessarily simplified. Information in describing the physical world is necessarily a simplification and is necessarily using symbolic representation like words to indicate or to transmit information about phenomenon which is not textual in nature or textual in origin, but it's using, or in videos. You may not have a doctored video, right? But how is it framed? Or what's going on before that? You might have a video showing, and I'll just talk for a second about China, whatever. There's a lot of video going around and we just don't know what it is, you know? And China is a very big country and many things go on in that country all the time. It's got over 1.5 billion people. And, you know, whatever our opinions about the need for like all this PPE gear or what, you know, maybe China's experiencing something else with biological war that we've actually talked about. Maybe they do. I mean, the PPE stuff is actually the correct, I mean, the full stuff, you see them all in white, that is like the correct stuff for contagious pathogens. And they're not messing around. We don't know what's going on. I mean, just take, for example, the possibility, okay, that China was attacked or thinks they are about to be attacked and they have credible information about that. And it's not, you know, SARS-CoV-2, maybe it's some kind of Aryan flu or swine or whatever, but it's been mixed with things that the effects of it are extra bad on the Han ethnicity. You can look at news articles, mainstream news articles from 7 years ago saying the next war will be biological war that targets the DNA of certain ethnicities. Okay. That's 7 years ago. Now, they often oversell or overrepresent what they're capable of doing. But anyway, the Chinese officials may not be crazy in whatever precautions they're doing, or if it's a drill or they're preparing, or maybe they do have evidence. We just don't know. Now, I'm not saying I want to live in China or that I love the CCP or anything. I'm just a person looking at information like you are. Okay. Now I understand some things that my mind is, maybe you can even say my mind is warped. Okay. By my education, but just in terms of China's geopolitical horizons and what their aims are, I mean, these are fairly standard. There's nothing, you know, particularly macabre or sinister. It's just the same problems that arise in great power rivalries. Okay. And China is certainly a great power. But when you look at, if you just look at a video that's gone viral and there's like 8 guys in PPE that are tackling some guy, okay, you don't know what is going on in there. You just don't know. You're assuming, like for whatever reason in your own mind, because we project things like far more often than not, we're projecting, okay? You don't know what's going on. But what you want to think, or what your confirmation bias is, that these guys are trying to force him to get in, forcing him because they're in PPE, right? So maybe they're like the COVID police, and maybe they're trying to force him to get vaccinated or something like that, right? Or they're whatever. No, they just have their, and I'm not saying this is normal or should be normalized. I don't know what's going on, but they're wearing this PPE because that's just like the regulation. And they're just doing maybe a normal arrest. Like maybe the guy is a child molester. Maybe he robbed a bank. Maybe he, whatever. Maybe he, you know, stole a car and he was named. And then now the thing is, what you have to understand is, and this is something I can say, the Chinese police, when it comes to these types of whatever encounters with citizens, if the crime was nonviolent against another person, they try to make the arrest not escalate to a violent situation. Like, they don't want to risk the apprehension of a suspect. This may be crazy for you in the U.S., but you know that we have a police abuse problem. Okay, so maybe this is a crazy idea. Like, maybe it's a crazy idea for you that if a person ran a red light and they don't stop with sirens, that you should call up backup and there should be 10 squad cars chasing them and ramming their cars and colliding into other cars. And, you know, 95 kids on a school bus get killed because the police were in a high speed pursuit to stop a guy who came to a rolling stop at a stop sign. Like, that's America, unfortunately. But China, for whatever all their problems, and I mean, we could list their problems, but they just don't approach law enforcement that way in most of the jurisdictions. Okay. So it's actually a safety thing to have multiple people, you know, multiple people to apprehend someone if you aren't using guns to shoot them. Or you see what I'm saying? If you're not going to try to resort to even using a stun gun, but you'll see in some of these events and the final analysis, when the person continues to resist arrest, that they will finally have to pull out the stun gun after having like seven or eight guys trying to make like a human circle around him and stuff. And I know it looks absurd. It looks like some, like that freaking weird Woody Allen movie where, you know, he's like wakes the sleeper or something like that. I know it looks freaking bizarre, but, you know. Yes. That's just those are just the things I, just give me a moment here. I have a toddler. All right. So, my girl's having a difficult afternoon, and this situation will not improve anytime soon. She's just flipping out, and she's too small to know like right and wrong and all this stuff. And she's saying she's hungry, but she actually doesn't want to eat anything. And so it doesn't make sense. And she's just having a tantrum. So, but we talked a lot today. Actually, we had a very decent run. We went almost an hour with this. And this may be all I'm able to do today, unfortunately. And that's just the fact of it. So, thank you very much. I'm going to upload this. I'm uploading the other ones from yesterday, the day before. I'm going to stop here and get to the rest. And this is actually, I think, cleaner this way. We actually just focused on the really in-depth on information war and how the psychology actually works with people in the field, right? So, all right, very good. Have a great rest of the day. I know I will.